Good morning. Our first speaker is Dr. Linda Rosenstock, who is the Dean of the School of Public Health at UCLA. Dr. Rosenstock, as she leaves our meeting, and she will have to leave soon after she speaks, will be going to be inducted as the incoming chair of the Association of Schools of Public Health. She is also a former director of NIOSH. We're going to keep our introduction short so that you can have a chance to ask her questions after the end of her presentation. Dr. Rosenstock.
Thank you, Carol and Barry, and good morning, everyone. I know these are, I was just commenting, nice to see some old friends showing up in the audience, that coming to APHA meetings and being first on reminds me of why you don't want to be teaching an 8 a.m. college course. It's not usually our best time, but I appreciate all of you who are up early and here, and I know people will be rolling in. I'm going to start off telling the story by telling the end, so let me start here and give you the conclusion of the Association of School of Public Health when it tried for the first time to our knowledge to quantify the public health workforce shortage. I think we all have a sense locally at a state and federal level that there's a shortage. We know jobs are going unfilled. We know there's been lots of issues about the adequacy of training, let alone the sufficiency of numbers. And we set about to see if we could make a reasonable estimate of what the shortfall might be in a period of time forward, looking at 2020, so that we could take some interventions to prevent it. So we came up that we would be short about 250,000 public health professionals. That's against a current workforce of approximately 500,000 now, which meant if we were to address it, a lot of work would need to be done. Now, I think the good news about these difficult economic times, frankly, is we're hearing a lot more discussion all over the country, certainly on the Hill, about the need to jumpstart the economy by rebuilding infrastructure, by having jobs programs and workforce, and I think, and investing in valuable rather than and the less valuable items we've been draining our treasury with. So I think what we have here is an opportunity in public health to take advantage of the crisis, to actually make the case, which I think is already partly understood, why public health investments are valuable and why even if it's a little bit more deficit spending, what's a little more compared to the $1.5 trillion between the war and the bailout and counting that we've just had, to make the case. In terms of the targeting, I've sort of using this phrase, borrowing on another phrase, the 97-3 problem. We know with the annual $2 trillion plus dollars going to health and healthcare in the United States, that less than 3% is being dedicated to public health activities, broadly described. So we have this huge amount of money on the healthcare side. That's why when we hear about healthcare reform, we often hear only about payment reform rather than true health system reform. It's important we make our arguments effectively, and I know we've all been thinking about that. Because one of the arguments we can make is, although this is phenomenally unbalanced dedication of dollars to public health, we have lots of data already available to show that the value of investment, dollar per dollar, of investing in preventive health and promoting health and well-being and assuring high-quality, accessible health care comes in the arena of the investments in population health, and no one other than Bill Gates actually says we want lifelong health and priorities. Prevention as much as it does treatment, and that's what we want in a system. So would that he would invest domestically as much as he does internationally in the concept of the value of prevention and promotion, but perhaps this will be an opportunity for us as well. So inadequate investments in public health, what we all call the infrastructure, I think can be fairly described as involving laboratories, information systems, the capacity for public health systems research and public health research, the systems of the organizations, the governmental organizations linked with the private sector organizations and academe, and then finally, the people who do it. And that's what I'm going to try to run through you here, the public health workforce itself as a key cornerstone of the public health infrastructure, one where we need significant investment and rebuilding and building given the widening threats. These two lines from two Institute of Medicine reports really just indicate that the Institute of Medicine in the last 5 years has spent some effort looking at the future of public health. Yet again, they do that periodically. The first report listed there, the future of the public health workforce, of public health in the 21st century was an overall effort, and a more specific one, who will keep the public healthy, did not quantify the shortage, recognize the shortage and the problems, and talked broadly about the making recommendations about how to deal with a better prepared and more adequately staffed public health workforce. So it was against that background that the Association of Schools of Public Health, having watched AAMC, the Association of American Medical Colleges, undertake the same activity, said, well, if no one else is quantifying this, let's as fairly and transparently try to do it ourselves. And I want to recognize the people who are on that committee from the Association of Schools of Public Health, my fellow deans, as well as Karen Helsings, who's here with us, our staff member who did yeoman's work in making this report possible. Copies of the final report, so all the details are available on the table here. I'm going to try to take you through some key points of what we did and what we didn't to get to this bottom line. So one of the problems about quantifying public health workforce and therefore the shortage, or might there have been an overage, is we have problems with systematically enumerating who the workforce is, unlike with physicians where we have licensure and one mechanism of training and certification that lets us capture the entire denominator of who's there, not necessarily who's working, but who's been trained. We know that the paths to public health practice and the places where they work are really numerous, and there really hasn't been good systematic reporting. But we do have some national efforts. We have two efforts in particular, 1980 and 2000. They are cited in the report, if you pick it up, that have let us quantify to the best as possible, trying to compare apples to apples, what's been going on with a public health workforce. One of the first things, as you can see here, is we know public health workers work in many different settings. As captured here, it looks like about 85% are in governmental settings. I actually think today's public health workforce is more diffuse than that, and many more are working in non-governmental settings, but this is the workforce as it's been enumerated. This is my pictorial way of talking about what the problem is. As you can see on the left-hand side, we have lots of different professions, disciplines, contributing to who we would consider the workforce, whether it be nurses or physicians, laboratorians and the like, and then again, working in a variety of different settings. What we found, the task force, in trying to address this issue was, like many other people who've done workforce estimates, really the basic ones we've seen over the ages, that probably the most reliable thing we could do was try to figure out the appropriate person-to-population ratio. In other words, could we use a benchmark of what would be an ideal number, even though it's not a perfect number, of the number of public health professions for the population that lets the demographics of the growing population work as you project forward? It's what's been done for medicine for a long time. Nurses are nursing is now doing it. It's a tried and true. It's not, as I said, not necessarily perfect, but what we came up with, since I've gone ahead there, is that given in absolute numbers, the findings of these two census activities was that there was actually 50,000 fewer public health workers in 2000 than 1980. I think that's true, but I think that's not as important as we said. Let's arbitrarily say 1980 was not necessarily the heyday of public health, but we know it was a time before there was a lot of erosion in support for public health, before we thought we'd lick the tuberculosis epidemic. And let's target the number of public health workers per population ratio there as our goal, as just as the exercise. And if we did that, projecting forward to the population size, that's how we came up with saying we'd need an additional 250,000 additional workers. Now, there are a lot of things we didn't do in that estimate, and I think it's worth telling you about those, and then I'll sort of wrap this up. Let me go back, though, to this slide, because I think in talking about the public health workforce, those numbers, looking about 1980s, I think that's fair to say that at that point, the public health workforce was focused on what we might consider the traditional public health challenges, the clean air, the clean water, the vaccinations, environmental issues, preventing worker health and safety problems. But we know that the complexity of the world and the role of public health have only gotten greater since then. And we didn't try to quantify that. As I said, we benchmarked the population ratio in 1980, but I think we have to recognize the globalizations. We'll hear more about that from Barry in a short while. But globalization has brought many adversities to public health. One certainly is the changing pattern and the risk for emerging infectious diseases and their ability to travel. We have profound problems with us already and on the horizon for health-related effects of climate change. We know about disaster preparedness and other aspects of globalization. So I just think qualitatively, we have to recognize this is a very dramatic changing environment, even though quantitatively we've been somewhat conservative in how we went around the estimate. What we didn't look at, we didn't look at retirement, and that's not a trivial thing. We just said, although we recognize that there's a retirement wave coming, or we thought there was. It was estimated that by 2010, approximately 100,000 public health workers would retire. Now, that was before the last 6 weeks. I'm quite sure that a lot of people who might have thought they were retiring, including some of us here, have decided to put that off a bit. But the risk is that we have an aging, an older population of public health workers who are eligible for retirement in a number of settings, and we need to think about the pipeline of replacing them. We didn't include this consideration. If we did, we would have had a greater estimate of the shortage. The other thing we didn't do is look at other activities. We didn't talk about issues of continuing education. We were talking about what would be if we were to quantify the roles for schools of public health, who train about 85% of graduate students in public health in the country every year from accredited schools and programs, although we do play that role. We didn't talk about specific disciplines, and that was just because we didn't feel we had good enough data. In other words, we didn't. I'll give you one other activity that estimated the physician shortage, but it was challenging enough to try to come up with these estimates. But I do think a better activity would say, what is the real shortage in terms of public health epidemiologists, laboratory workers, and the like? We have some state data about that, but we don't have that nationally. We didn't talk about geographic distribution, which of course is always an issue, more so I believe an issue for physicians than for public health workers, which is where are people working, where is the need the greatest. We didn't make distinctions in graduate training about types of degree. We didn't quantify the global capacity, although we know the role of the U.S. in building up global health, public health capacity is really important. So let me just flash on a couple of other items, because I got 1 minute. The IOM did take a quantification activity looking at physician shortage, and it came out about the same time we were undertaking our activity. Bottom line there is they estimated that we were short about 10,000 physicians to a total of 20,000 currently. So they said there needs to be basically a doubling of the physician workforce, very consistent with our findings, but again, specific to the subset. I just want to hit on the international public health workforce. We do play a role in the U.S. of building capacity. It's certainly been a major activity for schools of public health. It's one that's evolving and continuing to be of importance, particularly as we drain those very same workers from their countries. So we can talk about that. Just to hit on where, just a quick snapshot, the Americas versus Sub-Saharan Africa, about the same percent of the world's population, much greater burden of disease, of course, in Sub-Saharan Africa, much, much fewer health workers. And there they don't have the luxury, nor should we, I think, to distinguish medical care from public health workers, and very, very little money relative to us in terms of global health expenditure. So in conclusion, invite you to take a look at the paper. We have detailed recommendations of steps that can be taken in Congress and locally in terms of appropriating and authorizing legislation to move this dial forward. We also have state-by-state estimates, which are very useful in my own state of California. We're so big that we're short 35,000 workers by 2020. These are very effective tools to use locally, and we'd be happy to work with any of you if it would be helpful in your setting. So we have time now. Leave my last slide on, because I like this slide. Don't you like that? Good. And time to take any questions or comments. Yeah. Oh, we have time for one question. So make it good. Okay.
Have you considered the role for graduate level public health professionals? I know that a lot of schools of public health in and universities are open bachelor's degrees in public health?
Very, very fair question. We certainly consider it. We didn't quantify it in our comment about what we would need to do as schools in terms of tripling our own capacity to meet the shortage, because we recognize it's not only us. We just felt it was a little bit arrogant to start talking about what others should do, but we said if we were to assume this gap, there are increasing efforts at the undergraduate level. Certainly some jobs can be filled by public health undergraduates. In general, we like the idea of targeting master's level prepared public health professionals, because I think in professionalizing our workforce the way other disciplines have done, it will not serve us badly to think that way. But I think there's so much need. I think there are lots of different ways we should think about filling it. So thank you.
Thank you very much.